WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and 5 specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
As the old saying goes, if you do the crime, you do the time. But imagine staying behind bars longer than you're even supposed to, thanks to, of all things, shoddy record keeping. I'm Patrick Smith, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. A new law in Illinois is supposed to recalculate people's sentences based on their time working and taking educational classes. But it's getting off to a slow start. About 1,000 prisoners who are eligible for this are still behind bars. And it's mostly to do with poor record keeping at prisons. To learn more, I sat down with Charlotte West, a reporter who covers the future of secondary education in prisons for Open Campus, and with Candace Shameless, legal director for the Illinois Prison Project. Charlotte starts with what this new law, HB 3026, does.
It's supposed to give people additional time off their sentences for participating in things like prison jobs, correctional industries, assignments, education, and then also volunteer work and things like substance abuse treatment.
Now, Candace, take us back to when this law passed. What were your initial reactions when legislators passed this bill?
Yeah, the bill was signed by the governor in July of 23 to go into effect January 1st. And originally, we were really excited. I mean, literally thousands of people would be impacted and have shorter sentences as a result of this bill. We thought we'd be in a position of scrambling to secure housing for clients, things of that nature. But unfortunately, that has not been the case.
Yeah. What are you seeing now several months later?
Yeah, so several months later, people are still have not been accurately awarded credit that they have earned and deserve and that the law says they should have.
Yeah, so many people are still waiting. Charlotte, how many people have had their sentences recalculated so far? How many people have gotten out because of this new law?
As of May 1st, approximately 1,770 individuals had received credits under the new law. And out of those, there are about 1,295 that are still incarcerated and 475 that have gone home. And that's up by about 60-some people compared to the data that we got in at the end of March this year.
So, Charlotte, as I mentioned, one big issue with implementing this law is poor record keeping of the hours people have spent working and taking classes. I mean, tell me a little bit more about that. What's going on here?
Okay, so I think one of the important things to know about this law is the people who will benefit the most from this law, most of them have been incarcerated since the early 90s. So, you know, these guys have decades of participation in work and education assignments. So everyone has what you call a master file, which is basically a document that shows everything you've done while you're incarcerated. Even things like, you know, dietary plans, if you've signed up for that. But in 2010, the department started to pivot to a new digital record keeping system. And so for a lot of the work assignments and education assignments, you can only see records from 2010 forward. But for these guys that have been in since the 1990s, you know, that could be between, you know, 10 and 15 years of participation in programs that aren't showing up on their master file.
You know, I think it's important for people who aren't familiar with the prison system, who maybe didn't see your story at WBEZ, to get a sense of there's record keeping that's done by hand when these sentences were being recalculated. They're like, it's like a worksheet that you might see like in a grade school classroom where there's just a prison, a worker at the prison sort of calculating it longhand. I mean, did you see some examples of just
surprisingly poor record keeping?
Yeah, I mean, the math, we finally figured out how they had done the math and it was accurate. For the things that were being calculated on that sheet, but it was very strange. And it's also unclear on those sheets. Sometimes it might just say work. It doesn't say which work. It doesn't say what the dates were. So it's also very difficult for people to know exactly what they have gotten credit for in order to be able to challenge that. The primary way people would be able to challenge that is through the grievance process, which is a complaint system that involves a couple different levels of review at the individual facility, and then it eventually goes to Springfield.
Yeah, I mean, and these are people's lives and their freedom that's being sort of calculated. Like I said, it almost looks like on a scrap piece of paper, but by somebody whoever got assigned that day. Candace, tell us about what you're seeing. I mean, how are you seeing the educational and employment credits being processed for your clients?
Right. So attorneys in our office are just seeing. Seeing the law applied very differently at different facilities. We're seeing work history being accounted for, but none of the programming and educational courses that the law provides should also be calculated for awarding credit.
And I want to, somebody who speaks to that exact issue of different facilities is Suavel Tolliver. He's still incarcerated. He said once he heard from staff that the prison only kept computer records starting in the early 2000s, he and others had to find the paperwork themselves.
We are scrambling, trying to find, all of our, certificates and writing affidavits and paperwork and all of this. And then it just started a whole storm, man. They started telling us, you're not getting anything. And, or very little, they were going to cut everything that they can find in half. And that's what they started doing. They started giving people like literal days, people who, worked their entire period of incarceration, all of us who went to school and, did all of these programs. They was just finding more reasons and ways to tell us you're not going to get it. And we're still here because of it.
Candace, how often are you hearing from clients with stories like that?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, for instance, Mr. Tolliver, he, by our estimation, is owed approximately 4,198 days of credit. He has received 540. So that is a difference of approximately 5 years that he still has on his sentence. But by our calculations, he should have been home January 1st.
And I want to keep talking about this difference between facilities, because I think it highlights the issue that we have here. And this is not an issue of people not serving the time that they should. I mean, the state changed the law and they said if you've done these things to better yourself or work or get education, then you're going to get out earlier. You have two clients, one of them is Mr. Tolliver, who have similar profiles, including having taken classes at the same facility, I believe. But one was released under this new law, and one, Mr. Tolliver, is still incarcerated. I mean, tell us about Andrew Sue and Suavel Tolliver's cases and what they tell us about this issue.
Right. So on January 1st, when the law went into effect, Mr. Suh, he was at Kewaunee Correctional Facility or Life Skills Study Center, whereas Mr. Tolliver is at Dixon Correctional Facility. They both have really similar profiles. Mr. Suh has served approximately 30 years. Mr. Tolliver is in his 27th year of incarceration. They both have incredible backgrounds as far as education, programming, and work history. However, on January 26th, Mr. Suh was released, whereas Mr. Tolliver remains incarcerated.
Charlotte, what have you heard from the Corrections Department about these inconsistencies?
They are aware that the record keeping is an issue. And I did receive a statement from the department that said that they do consider records outside of an assignment history to verify participation. So it looks like they are, in some cases, accepting things like printouts from the trust fund account, which is basically like the bank account for incarcerated people that shows, things like deposit, things like payments for work assignments. So that is another way that they are verifying employment. But there's some issues with this, like if people haven't kept documentation, or sometimes, when people are transferred from one prison to another, they lose records. So there's definitely the risk of people falling through the cracks.
WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
How does AI even work? Where does creativity come from? What's the secret to living longer? TED Radio Hour explores the biggest questions with some of the world's greatest thinkers. They will surprise, challenge, and even change you. Listen to NPR's TED Radio Hour wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Charlotte, you published a story about this law and the poor record keeping and the sentences not being calculated correctly in late April here at WBEZ. One of the people in that story was Richard McConnell. A week after the story published, Mr. McConnell was released. Can you tell us about him and his case?
Richard McConnell has been incarcerated since 1994. So he served almost 30 years. And he had very good record keeping. He had used his trust fund account to show his employment in correctional industries. He was still missing some records, but he had enough participation that once sort of his files got a second look, he was eventually released. We had actually sent copies of his records to the department for review. They wouldn't comment specifically on his case, but I don't think it's a coincidence that a week later he came home.
Yeah, he was pulled out of class in prison and told he was getting released the next day. You, Charlotte, caught up with him shortly after his release. Here's Richard McConnell describing what the quick turnaround was like.
Surreal. When I laid my head down last night, I wasn't in a very good state of mind. I was considering, along with a couple other guys, that if my work release was going to be denied, I was going to go on a hunger strike until I was released. Me and some other guys that have good time coming from HB 3026 as well.
Charlotte, wow, a hunger strike. I mean, it shows just how high the stakes are for the people inside.
I mean, I think, you know, a lot of folks have been expecting some kind of relief from this bill. And, you know, you kind of get your hope is a rare thing in prison. And I think you get your hope up and then you realize it's not happening on the timeline that you thought. I think it just gets very, very frustrating. I'm sure Candace has also heard this from her clients.
Yeah, Candace, what is it like for your clients to have that sort of the hope of the law getting passed and then those hopes kind of dashed? I mean, what is it like emotionally for the people you work with?
Oh, it's completely heartbreaking. We had a gentleman attend one of our virtual legal clinics last week who was told by the prison that his father would be coming home as a result of this bill very soon. With no explanation, the prison changed its position. They told the individual that he would not be coming home. And, I mean, his son was almost in tears describing what that was like for him and his family to have lost their dad for decades, think they're getting him back, and then just to find out that's not the case. And just to further illustrate that point, I mean, Mr. Suh, who's now been home for a few months, he's working full time. He's volunteering at a community organization. He attends church weekly. He made dumplings for the first time since he was a child, you know, with his niece, who he met for the first time in person. Whereas, by contrast, Mr. Tolliver was on lockdown yesterday and wasn't able to access the phone to even make a phone call to wish his mother a happy Mother's Day.
Wow. I wonder if we could step pretty far back in our conversation here. And if I could ask you sort of, if somebody's listening to this and they're a little skeptical of the idea of extra time off for this sort of work and education that people are getting inside, I mean, why was this law passed? Why is this a good thing to give people who are serving time for serious crimes, more time off their sentence?
Yeah, I mean, this is credit that has been earned and that the law has demonstrated as a means for people to come home. In 2020, the governor outlined 7 guiding principles for reforming our criminal legal system. And one of those points that he made was that was to reduce excessive lengths of stay in prison by providing pathways for people to earn opportunities for rehabilitation. Research shows that making our communities safer and lowering recidivism rates is having people participate in these meaningful educational opportunities, attaining job skills and substance abuse help, things of that nature. And we want to give them incentives to do that work. That is what works in helping to keep recidivism rates low. And by removing those incentives and by not giving people the credit they've earned is truly punitive.
So if there are people listening right now who have a loved one in prison, or maybe if people inside are listening to this, what can people do if they're locked up or their loved one is locked up and they feel like their sentence should be recalculated or hasn't been properly recalculated?
Yeah, I mean, as Charlotte mentioned, filing a grievance through their facility is something we certainly recommend. But in reality, the real remedy comes from the Illinois Department of Corrections implementing the policy and procedures to fully adhere to this law and honor it and award people the credit they are owed.
Yeah, what do you want to see IDOC do? What should the department do? What should the governor's office do here?
Yeah, if they can work together to really put in place policies that allow for people to be recalculated uniformly, not just based on facility to facility or who happens to be looking at the paperwork, but that there's an actual uniform application of this law and that people are given the credit they have earned and deserve.
And I know when Charlotte was doing her reporting, we heard from one of the sponsors of the legislation who essentially said, like, hey, they're still working out the kinks and there needs to be things worked out here. So at least that sponsor believes that there's work still to be done and that it is being done. Charlotte, I wonder if I could ask you, after reporting this, I know you've been following it. Have you been hearing from more people inside who are reaching out to you to say, hey, or attorneys reaching out, say, hey, my sentence was miscalculated as well?
So I've definitely heard from folks who are still incarcerated, who think that they have the work and education history to be immediately released. Unfortunately, I think Richard McConnell is the only person I know of who's gone home since then. So it still doesn't seem like there's a ton of movement. But there are definitely a lot more people that are still in this situation. A couple of folks I talked to, Toussaint Daniels, Benny Lopez, the list could go on.
I know that you are going to keep following this, even though you have lots of other things that you are covering as well. That is Charlotte West, a reporter who covers the future of secondary education in prisons for Open Campus. Also with us today was Candace Chambliss, legal director for the Illinois Prison Project. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Patrick.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic. It was edited by Meha Ahmad and mixed by Brenda Ruiz. For more coverage of news that affects Chicago and Illinois, make sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen. I'm Patrick Smith, in for Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks for listening, and Sasha will be back with another conversation for you later today.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.